was a young lad in me prime.
Hey, hey, Santiano!
I went to sea in the summertime.
All on the plains of Mexico.
Why do them yellow girls love me so?
Way, hey,
ahoy there, Steelman.
Ahoy, Dave. Avast, ye swabs. Ye dirty swabs.
Yeah, there's so many swabs out there that is filthy, filthy swabs.
Lubberly, those lubberly swabs, Dave.
Yeah, land lubbers. They can't even, they try and get on a boat. You know they're just going to fall in between the boat and the sailing vessel.
Yeah.
They can't get on. They don't know what they're doing.
Dave, you know why they call it a dog watch?
I do. I'll tell you why.
What?
Because it's been curtailed.
Oh! That's so good. Dave Jensen, I'm so happy to be talking to you tonight for a very, very special issue of Theme Songs.
Yeah, it's so special. We're going to release this one in magazine form as an issue. That's how good this is going to be. I'm just excited.
You know, the National Sound Preservation Recording Podcast Historical Archives have contacted us and asked us if they can etch this onto a diamond record to last for 1,000,000 years, the recording of this podcast. So we're considering it.
From what I understand, it will be 2 diamond records, one to keep on Earth and one that will sail off into the cosmos on a rocket. So,
yeah, this is our first cosmos worthy episode. We've been at this podcast thing for a while. This has been years in the making. Tonight, Dave, the theme is sea shanties.
Steel, I don't think I could be any happier. I got smiles. I mean, tonight we're talking sea shanties because we have a shared love.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we have a shared love. Let's just say that.
Yeah, we just.
Article 39. I feel like the laws of the sea, Dave. You got to know Article 39.
I introduced you to 2 of my best friends, and now I feel like they're also now 2 of your best friends. What do you think?
Dave, I could not agree more. Dave, you know, you give me book recommendations, and I'm like, oh, that sounds nice. Maybe I'll give it a shot. And you're like, oh, you got to read these Master and Commander, the Aubrey Maturin books. They're quite funny, and they're good. And I was like, yeah, I bet they'll be okay. I read the first one, and it was like I was reading a book in a foreign language. It was bewildering, it was funny, it was interesting, but I only understood like maybe 60% of it. It's like it's in dialect, and it's like sea dialect. He's just throwing you in, and he's talking about sailing and all these sailing words, and I was like, what's a mizzen? What's a staysail? What's going on? But I just loved it, and I was like, I'm hanging on. And then I went on a trip where I was away and in a hotel, and I was like, I'm not with Laurel and Cedar, I'm just going to read. And so I read the second one. And then I was like, I'm in. And I read the third one and then the fourth one. And that's literally all that I've read for the last 2 months. And I'm a voracious reader. I read all the time. So I'm now on book 19.
I love the – so it's the Master and Commander series with Captain Jack Aubrey and Stephen Maturin. I love these books so much. I remember I met a guy, it's probably 7 or 8 years ago. He told me he loved these books. He told me he's read them all 3 times. And I thought, like, this guy, what is wrong with this guy? Like, why doesn't he have something better to do with his life? Like, he read 20 books multiple times. This guy is the worst. Like,
and, where did you meet him? Yeah. Was he an old guy? Who was this mystery man?
No, I was at college at NAU. He's just a young married guy. He was like in his mid-20s, and he's read all these. I think he'd served in the American Navy, so he'd had his interest piqued. And so, but it stuck with me enough to where I picked up Master and Commander. I read it again. Yeah, he's so precise and I think accurate with his description of sailing and the vessels. Like, I still don't know anything about where the sails go and stuff. So it's difficult to understand what he's saying. But I was caught up in the adventure and just like the biting humor. Now, when I read these books, I just giggle. I can't stop laughing. I'll be somewhere for lunch and I'll just start laughing out loud. I can't. It's so funny.
They're witty. They're intelligent. They're fun. My big question, they're dry. They're English. There's so many good things about them. So here's a quick question for you, Dave. Do you know what a coxswain is? Do you know what a bosun is? Like, I've been reading these books. I'm 19 novels in, and there's these characters that have these roles. I don't know. I mean, I've looked up what they do, but I still don't get it. I don't know what they do. And it doesn't distract from my enjoying the books at all.
And I think that's kind of magical, because I think my wife would get caught up in not knowing where the sails were, or some people might be bothered by it, but just the magic of the adventure and the friendship and the hilarity. Like, I don't care. I know that Barrett Bondon is Jack Aubrey's coxswain. I don't know what that means other than Barrett Bondon's like the coolest guy ever.
He really is. In fact, Dave, is that a good segue to the music?
Sure. I love music.
Because my first song came from our mutual friend, Jordan Fox. There is a legendary Canadian folk singer named Stan Rogers. And one of his great songs is a sea shanty that he wrote that's called Barrett's Privateers.
And because of these books, I know what a privateer is.
How I wish I was in Sherbrooke now. A letter of mark came from the king to the scummiest vessel I've ever seen. God damn them all. I was told we'd cruise the seas for American gold. We'd fire no guns, shed no tears. Now I'm a broken man on a Halifax pier, the last of Barrett's privateers. Oh, well, said Barrett, cried the town. How I wish I was in Sherbrooke now. Or 20 brave men, all fishermen, who would make for him the Antelope's crew. God damn them all.
I was told cruise the sea for American gold. Bear no guns, shed no tears. Now a broken man on the Halifax pier, the last to bear its privateers.
The Antelope sloop was a sickening sight.
I've been listening to that song so much lately. Like, Cedar knows it now. I'm like singing it in the morning. And Laurel's like, what are you singing? And I'm like, I'm a broken man on the Halifax pier, the last to bear its privateers. So it's taken over our house. It's taken over. I mean, there's a YouTube video that's even better. It's him and these five Canadian dudes with like neck scarves. And it's amazing. They're just sitting around a table singing it. Maybe the best thing on YouTube.
Send me the link. I'll check it out.
Okay.
And a sea shanty has to kind of bring you into that world of the sailor. And that one, totally, you're there. You can feel what that guy's feeling. My first sea shanty is literally titled Shanty. It's called a shanty for Arethusa.
Sure.
And of course, if it's going to be a shanty, if it's going to be some type of ridiculous, archaic song that tells some type of ridiculous, archaic story, it's going to be by the Decemberists.
It's Colin Molloy. Yeah, okay.
To sail on a packet full of spice, rum and tea leaves. We've emptied out all the bars and the Bowery Hotel. And tell your daughters, do not streets alone tonight. Tell your daughters, do not tonight. Tell the tale of the Jewess and the Mandarin Chinese boy.
Had to get to the tale of the Jewess and the Mandarin Chinese boy. That's how you know it's a December song.
But that's also one that, for some reason, I sing that around the house. It's not very tuneful, but I really like it. And it's my shanty.
Dave, the thing that makes that such a perfect shanty is the accordion. That's a real shanty instrument. Well done. Well, good choice. So, Dave, I think I might do this rare thing where it's a bit of a twofer, if you don't mind.
Oh, yeah, twofer.
Yeah. So in the Aubrey and Maturin series, Dave, for those who haven't read it, these men are both clearly allied with the English cause. And they're allied with the English cause because they're fighting the French.
Yeah, yeah, they don't like Napoleon. It's not even necessarily the French that they hate. They hate Napoleon and what he's forcing France to be.
Yeah. Maturin especially thinks he's a tyrant. Now, this is a song by the band Jack Shit. I'm sorry, but that's their name. And the song is about Napoleon, whose nickname was Boney for Bonaparte. Boney was a warrior. Are you ready?
I think so.
Here you go. That's a thoroughly terrible song, sung poorly, but it's about Napoleon.
Yes.
And it mentions them, he beat the English nearly. And that's the nearly is really what the Aubrey Maturin stories turn on, because Napoleon didn't beat him.
And it's so satisfying. So, yeah, the series basically, it's tracking the naval warfare between England and France throughout the Napoleonic Wars. And Captain Jack is, you know, just this charismatic sea captain. When he's ashore, he's kind of lost and buffoonish. But when he's a captain, he's almost unstoppable, does amazing things. And his friend, his Dr. Maturin, is kind of works as a Secret Service agent, but refuses pay. And he's a very skilled physician. And through the series of novels, that you just completely are on board with these guys to where, like, I hate Napoleon too. And even later on when they fought Americans briefly, I was like, yeah, Americans suck.
Yeah. The thing is, they're not just friends, Dave. Maturin is his particular friend. I love that that's the expression they use for, like, my good friend or whatever. Like, I want to start calling you my particular friend. Dave is my particular friend. That's like, that's the thing we got to bring back.
That would honor me. It would honor me greatly still. Yeah.
So, Dave, this is another song that's a – this was – one of the things that the sailors are known for is their lustiness. And when they're at sea, sometimes have long periods of kind of undesired abstinence. So when they go to shore, there's often a lot of licentiousness, and they get treated for venereal disease quite frequently after leaving port. This was a song about – it's a sea shanty about a woman named Sally Racket. By Katie Redd and Big Freedia. It's just the names of lots of women and the ways they like to get down, more or less. And this is like an old English traditional folk song. These guys updated it, but it's a sea song basically about promiscuous women.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
And that is a part of sea life. You know, and these sailors, they yearn still. They're men that yearn.
All we need is love, Dave. All we want is love.
So when I think of sailing songs, I mean, of course, so many come to mind. I'm sailing, sailboats away. I love to sail. So many songs.
Or Crosby, Stills, and Nash, The Southern Cross. You know, that's a great sailing song.
Yeah, yeah. There's so many good ones. But
Loggins and Messina.
There's none more impressive than, of course, I think the Beach Boys' take on a traditional song, Sloop John B. I just love it.
It's so good, and it's so, so wimpy at the same time.
They're beautiful vocal harmonies. It talks about the first mate getting drunk, and there is some alcohol-related humor throughout the Aubrey Maturin novels. But
there is, Dave. I feel like this was the thing you texted me about, like animals getting drunk all the time. You're like, this is a key feature of the books. And I was like, absolutely is. I wonder if this is the story or a story you might be about to tell.
This one that in the book that I read recently, Stephen brings a sloth onto the vessel, and the sloth doesn't like Jack at all. He just is never friendly towards him till Jack one day starts feeding him alcohol, and the sloth gets very friendly. But Stephen comes to see the sloth intoxicated, and he's pretty irate. It says something around the lines of, like, you've debauched my sloth.
Yeah.
And it's just hilarious.
I think the sloth dies shortly thereafter of, like, liver poisoning or something like that. They killed the sloth from drunkenness. But I think the alcohol is an important part of sea life, not just for the animals, because here's my question, Dave. If you were, like, imagining that you wanted to incite a crew to mutiny, one thing you could do would be to bring out the cat, you know, start whipping people. And clearly that's going to produce a sullen ship. But what would you say would be
the fastest? But that's going to take time. Would take time.
What's the fastest way to mutiny if you're a cat, if you want to be a bad captain?
You just stop their grog. Stop their grog. You're going to have a mutiny, like, immediately.
This is a song by Lewis Killen, Jeff and Garrett Warner, and the old Fudd Benson. It's called All For Me Grog. This is a classic maritime song.
Jolly, jolly grog, all for me beer and tobacco, for I spent all me tin on the lass's drinking chin, and across the western ocean I must wander. Where is me boots, me noggin, noggin boots, all gone for beer and tobacco? All worn out, and the heels are knocked about, and the toes are looking out for better weather. All for me grog, me jolly, jolly grog, all for me beer and tobacco, for I spent all me tin on the lass's drinking gin, and across the western ocean I must wander. Where is me shirt, me noggin, noggin shirt, all gone for beer and tobacco? For the
color is wore out, and the front is not about, and my tail is looking out for better weather. All for me grog, me jolly jolly.
Tell me you're not going to be singing that song incessantly tomorrow.
And a great thing about the books is the presentation of sea life. Like these sailors on this vessel, like every day is very regimented. They're doing these things, and it's a hard life. And so they get very few good things every day. And every day they get some grog, and that's so important to them. They look forward to it. If you miss out on your grog, like it just sucks so much.
I can't remember what it's called now, so I'm gonna butcher it, but. There's like a particular, once they get shipwrecked, and there's a day where Jack has to announce that they're out of alcohol or whatever, and it's like a holiday, it's like Saint Something's Day, when it's like the day of their last grog ration or something. They try to make a game out of it, but that's how I realized how important the grog was to these Englishmen.
Well, it makes sense when you're just in a really limited space. You're sailing around the world. You're seeing the same guys day after day. It sounds like such a miserable life. Like, you have to have something good in your day. And I guess it's sad that it's a little bit of alcohol, but that's what they had.
Get an inebriant. Something pleasant. Dave, the other question I have for you actually is, in the book, they talk about beer and Skittles in the pub. What are Skittles? Do you know?
Sure.
Is this like food?
A delicious fruit-flavored candy. Taste the Rainbow, you may have heard.
Oh, okay.
Isn't Skittles like a game?
Yeah,
I have no idea.
I had to look it up, actually. I just looked it up. Uh-huh. It's like nine-pin or bowling, I guess. So you go to the pub and you drink some beer and you go bowling, play Skittles. But I read like probably eight books where this was mentioned and I didn't know what it was, but it only now occurred to me I should look it up, because I'm like, oh, cool, yeah, it's not Skittles. And I'm like laughing like I got the reference, but I really didn't until this a second ago.
What do you think it is about these books? Is it just because there is so much detail that like you just don't care about understanding some of the detail? Like, why do you think, like, I don't care where the sails are. Like, why can you still enjoy it without knowing those things?
See, I'm not exactly sure. I think there's a strong sense of like the dramatic writing, but there's also at the heart of it, like a human friendship. And the friendship it's an odd couple. It very much is, but it's one that each character has their definite strengths that you admire. And they're human in a sense that like, they're not, they feel kind of heroic and invulnerable, but also vulnerable enough to like worry about them. And I think that's really what drew me in and makes the book's compelling and interesting. It's the human friendship at the start of it, the friendship between these two men. And I don't know that I necessarily see myself in either man, but I see aspects of manhood that I think – or masculinity that I admire in both of them in various measures. And I appreciate the kind of contours of their friendship, and that makes me just want to keep reading even if I don't understand the particular details of what's happening at sea. But that's the whole point, because Steven doesn't either, and he's been on the ship for 20 years or whatever. He doesn't have the first idea of what's going on.
And it is, just the portrait of those two men, because they're presented in great detail to where, like I was joking before, I feel like they're two of my friends, but I really do. I feel like I know those men, and I just root for them in everything.
See, the other thing I was texting you about, Dave, was, are there really any other characters in the book? Where I was like, there's a bunch of recurring characters, but the only people I feel like I even sort of know are Jack and Steven. Everybody else is sort of a prop. But it's not bad, necessarily. I don't really even mind. I just realized that in hindsight. I'm like, yeah, everybody else is a prop.
It's interesting how that is, and how I'm still totally satisfied with the stories and the novels. But yeah, like you could maybe tell me about Thomas Poulenc. I like him. I feel like he's a likable guy, but I don't know anything about him other than I think he has a scar on his face.
A terrible scar that he his nose or something. But I don't even remember that. We'll talk more about the books in a second, but you got a last song for
us. A while back, Rosie came on the podcast and played a song by this artist, and I still listen to it. I still think about it. I think this guy's a really interesting, weird artist.
He's
also been an actor. He's been on television series, and he's the dad of someone who we played on our last episode. My sister played Rufus Wainwright. This is Loudon Wainwright. I think he's just a strange, interesting, compelling character. Not necessarily always the best guy, but just a lot of great music from him. And this is a sea shanty that he wrote and sings. It's called Turkish, or I don't know if he wrote it, but he sings it anyway, Turkish Revelry.
There was a little ship, and she sailed on the sea. And the name of the ship was the Turkish Reveille. Ah, she sailed down in that lonely, lonesome water. Ah, she sailed on the lonesome sea. Up stepped a little sailor, saying, "What'll you give to me to sink that ship to the bottom of the sea? If I sink her in the lonely, lonesome water, if I sink her in the lonesome sea. I have a house, and I have some land, and I have a daughter that shall be at your command. If you sink her in that lonely, lonesome water, if you sink her in the lonesome sea."
That's beautiful, Dave. That's a really nice song to end our sea shanty on. Not as aggressive or yo-ho-ho-y as some of our earlier ones, but a lovely little ancient ballad.
And the instrumentation, just that fiddling, just somewhat sounding a little bit out of tune, is great. Yeah, accordion, fiddle, those are things I want in my sea shanties.
Dave, a slightly out of tune fiddle and a cello? Tell me a little bit more about Aubrey Maturin's friendship and how music plays a role.
There's another beautiful aspect of their friendship. Aubrey plays the violin, and I think he plays it moderately well, as it's described, and Maturin plays the cello also moderately well. And one thing that they do on ship is they're traveling around the world. I mean, they spend years together on ship, just in the middle of the ocean, and at night they'll play music together.
In fact, it's music that forms their friendship. It's music that brings them together, because if you remember the very first book, the very first... Jack is going to Molly Hart's. He's having an affair with this admiral's wife, and she's hosting some musical concert or something, and Maturin is there, and then later he sees Maturin outside of a cafe and then invites him on his ship, and then, you know, music from there.
And what's interesting about that initial meeting is it was very nearly came to blows, a fight that it just so happened through happenstance that it didn't, and they became particular friends. Beautiful. Yeah.
Particular friends, Dave. So, Dave, this is fitting because a lot of our readers are also fans of the series, and so we had a really lovely question, and this is one that's you're going to have to put your thinking cap on for. This comes from Padine from Galway, Ireland.
Oh.
County Clare.
Yeah, what does he have to say?
He wrote it in the Irish tongue, but let me translate it to English for you.
Thank you.
There are so many characters in the Aubrey Maturin series. I mean, there's 20, 21 books worth. Everybody knows and loves Jack Aubrey and Stephen Maturin, but we all know at heart that none of us are Aubrey or Maturin. However, which minor character would you describe yourself and your co-host as? You have to say, like, who you would be and who you think I would be, Dave, and I guess I've got to do the same thing for you.
Thanks, Padine. I think it's a terrific question. And it's interesting also in relation to what we were just talking about, that like these are really just like kind of sketches. Like when I think of these people, it's just kind of like a blurry image in my mind. I don't see like a clear image of any of these guys.
Despite them appearing in 2,300 something page novels.
Should I go first or you? What do you think?
Go for it, Dave.
Okay.
Actually, I don't know. Let me go first because I don't know the books as deeply as you do. So I'll do my bad answer because I'm usually wrong on these answers, and then you can give the right answer. How's that?
Okay.
So for me.
Yeah, Dave, go ahead.
I had to think about this not that long, actually. I was like, oh, this is obvious. In the books, there are these two like poetasters, wannabe poets. One writes in the classical style and one writes in the modern style. They both write terrible poems only about the sea life, but one of them writes in the modern style and is basically getting scammed by like a somebody who's taking his money and promising to publish his book, but that's never going to really publish his book. His name's William Mowat, and I have to say, there's nobody in these books that I more closely resemble than William Mowat.
And as I read these, even initially, I thought of you when I read about these guys. Yeah, how do you feel about the because poetry, like they throughout the books, they'll present a poem or two in different books. How do you feel about the poems these guys are producing?
They're doggerel, but the thing is, none of them. The whole point is like the seagoing life. It's not really about that's why Stephen's so starved to talk about someone who's actually read books. Because for Jack, the virtue of a poem is, does it reference something awesome that happened in the Navy? And he's like, capital poem, fine poem. Like the saying, the worth and the value of a saying or the wittiness of a saying is, did it reference something awesome that happened in the Navy? It's like his story. He's got these stories about Horatio Nelson, who's like his hero. And one of them is, never mind maneuvers, go straight at him. And that's like his profound wisdom. But the other thing that he really loves to tell is the only other thing that Nelson said to him. He's at the table.
Please, could you pass the salt?
And like, he tells that story over and over as like, what a great man. Because Nelson asked him to pass the salt. And that's the level of like the poetry these guys are reading. It's like, oh. Would you pass the salt? What a profound thing this man said. You read Mowat's poems and you're like, well, it's the would you pass the salt version of naval poetry.
So can I tell you who you really are?
Yes, please.
So Jack Aubrey has a steward by the name of Preserved Killick.
Oh, Dave, you make my heart so warm. Preserved Killick is my favorite minor character.
So he is a very grating, kind of whiny man. He steals from the captain's stores. He drinks leftover wine from the table. He's always crying about Jack Aubrey taking care of his uniform. So just like you're a whiny, very grating person, always talking about poetry, things people don't want to hear about. But deep in Killick's heart, he's a good man. He's a good sailor. He cares about Jack Aubrey. He cares about Stephen Maturin. And like when it comes to fighting, when it comes to really getting down and taking care of business, he's awesome. But just everything about the outside of him is off-putting. You're just like you, but you have this heart of gold.
Oh, Dave, every time Killick appears, I laugh out loud and I tell Laurel, Preserved Killick is back. And she's like, okay, cool. I like that guy. So this is nice. It's the best name. He's got the best name in the book. And you know how I love a good name, Dave.
And like, I don't think I've ever actually heard Jack Aubrey yell Killick, but I can hear it in my mind. I can just hear Jack yelling Killick at him. It's great.
Which I'm a coming, ain't I? Which I'm a coming. Which I'm a bringing the toasted cheese. A shrewish man. That's good, Dave. I love it. All right, Dave. So here's my – Padin asked who your co-host was. And this one was a little trickier, Dave, because there's so many good characters. But I think the one I'm going to go with is the infamous William Babington.
Oh, Babington, really?
Babington, yeah. And the thing about Babington is you first meet him as this midshipman, which is like – a young officer in training, and they're like teenagers. They're punks. And Babington is the punkish of all the punks. He's the one who's always playing pranks. He's the one who's always getting people into trouble. He's just a total rascal, but he's a lovable rascal. And then he matures and grows up. He's also famous for being short. So I thought, hey, this is Dave. And he's short probably because he got some kind of weird pox or venereal disease because he's obsessed with women. And I was like, also, Dave Jensen. And then the third thing about him is he matures into becomes a fine, generous officer. He's got his own ship. There's the homely daughter of some important guy who marries this villain. And then they run off together and he treats her well. They have this good, dorky, loving relationship, these two homely, terrible folks. And I thought, you know what? That's Dave Jensen at the core. Dedicated family man. He gives Jack his opportunity to get back in the Navy, get on the ship's rules. As a younger, like when I first met you, Dave, you were like this long-haired dude wearing a headband that was like so cool, up for playing pranks all the time, and always making out with girls on the couch. So I thought that's William Babington to a T.
Fortunately, I avoided venereal disease, but
couple close calls though.
But you Babington.
Are short. You know, you're short.
Yeah, I'm not the tallest guy, but back then I think most of these guys weren't that tall. See, again, you're wrong. You're wrong with this one. Because you're certainly preserved, Kalik, like no doubt.
And who are you? So,
of course I'm Barrett Bondin, ultra competent sailor. If you need someone at the wheel, if there's a terrible storm, Bondin's the one driving the ship. You need someone to go like on an awesome midnight raid with you, Barrett Bondin's there and he's killing everybody. He is
the champion boxer of the entire naval fleet, Dave.
Oh yes, he, toughest guy. See,
but come
when
on,
it comes
doesn't
to
that instantly disqualify you? He does have long, awesome hair until he fights the guy in town.
That's not actually who I am.
But it's who you want to be.
It's everybody wants to be Barrett Bondin, like, no doubt.
Is he the Diesel of the books? If you were going to cast this movie, would you put Diesel as Barrett Bondin?
Oh, Diesel. Diesel's too coarse to play any of these people. I'm sorry, Ven. You can't be in this film.
Who do you cast as Barrett Bondin then? Who's Barrett Bondin? This is my big question for you. This is a million-dollar question, Dave.
He's got to just be a young, extremely likable, charismatic, competent man that you see him and you immediately put all your trust in. If we could recall someone from death, it of course would be Paul Walker.
No, come on. Paul Walker.
No, honestly, it wouldn't be Paul Walker. He's just not. He doesn't have the charisma and just the likability and just the natural intelligence. Like, Bondin doesn't know how to read, but Matern teaches him how. Not because he's dumb, but just he's never had the opportunity. He's just an intelligent, awesome guy. I don't know. Like, he's like almost a mythic character to me.
Yeah, he really is. You know who I'd cast, though, Dave?
Who?
You remember Dougie Doug?
From like Cool Runnings?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I love that guy. He's like my favorite actor, except for Robert Duvall. Actually, Robert Duvall would have been an awesome Barrett Bondin.
Oh, dude, that's it. A young Robert Duvall. Done.
But I actually think I'd go with Dougie Doug. I love Dougie Doug. In fact, not to be Barrett Bondin, but if I had to pick a coxswain, if I was a captain, I'd be like, Dougie Doug, job is yours. I don't know what your job is exactly, but I want you around.
But still, I'll let you see if you can tell about this character, but who I really am, I'm Nathaniel Martin.
So again, venereal disease. Nathaniel Martin is convinced he has psychosomatic venereal disease and nearly dies because he's so racked by sin and guilt. I can see that, Dave.
But no, he's just a...
Martin is cool. I really liked Martin until he got rich and then he got sucky.
And I'm just, you know, young Martin... He's just he's a nice guy. He's not a terribly competent, but he learns as he goes. He's very likable, but he's not like everybody doesn't like him. He's fine. Everybody feels okay about him. And he's interested in interesting things. He's interested in science along with Matern. He becomes good friends with him. He's just a, you know, pretty benign, likable guy that's not super competent, but eventually gets a little bit better at everything.
There's a whole book where I was very worried that Martin was going to become Matern's best friend and there'd be no place for Aubrey. And I think Aubrey's worried about that too. He's a parson, which means that Jack Aubrey is always mildly to extremely uncomfortable with him and around him. He doesn't do well with parsons, doesn't like him on his ship. He's one-eyed. He's a one-eyed naturalist. He loves birds and stuff, so he and Matern buddy him all around on that. And then the other thing is, after his first voyage, he goes back and writes this big scathing denunciation of violence in the Navy and how terrible the Navy is, basically shooting himself in the foot and guaranteeing he'll never have a job again, which is awesome. It's like a bold move. He's like, what's the word for it?
Not well thought out.
Yeah. But then he gets a berth aboard the privateer, the ship with the letter of marque, and then he serves as the surgeon's assistant for Matern, and they make big money. And, you know, he marries well, and he gets a parsonage, and we never see him again. But that's Nathaniel Martin. That's a good choice, Dave.
You can only adventure for so long. You got to settle down.
Does he have six children? Who has a million children? Is anybody with a million children in those books? I should have thought of that.
He has to have at least six children. So, but basically it goes without saying, I encourage anyone to read these books, especially if you're a male. There's not really any compelling female characters in the books.
Clarissa Oaks.
She's later on, huh?
Yeah, pretty late. It's like book 17. And you know what, Dave? I'm in book 19, and I just found out that there are occasionally women aboard ships. We meet, what's her name, Tess or Bess or Dess or whatever, his loblolly girl, Maturin. And I'm like, wait, that's a bit late, Patrick O'Brien. He realizes he's about to die, I think, and he's like, I got to put a female character in the book.
They're very occasional, but it's Jack Aubrey doesn't hold to it. He's not a fan of having women aboard. That's not something he does. So if you're a woman, hey, you know, you probably have to be interested in English naval fiction to want to read them. But anybody else, any other gender, I certainly recommend it.
All right, Dave, last question.
Yeah, I'm ready.
If you were to be like, let's say you're a TV producer, you're writing a set of novels, and you've got to write a new series, like you're doing a spinoff or like a side franchise. Like you've just made Breaking Bad and then you do Better Call Saul. Who's the central character of your spinoff? And is it kind of along the same lines or is it totally different direction? Who's your kind of like vehicle for your Master and Commander spinoff?
So I think you need a different perspective. So you either got to go with just a regular sailor, not an officer, or you go with like a midshipman and you Ooh. Go with their perspective. I think, but I like the Horatio Hornblower series did some of the midshipman stuff and that was pretty good. So I'd like to just be, on deck with just the regular, the competent seaman.
an able seaman?
Yes, an able. I'd like to know more about able seamen.
Just want to be on deck with an able seaman, huh?
But no, honestly, I think that would be an interesting and fun perspective. And, you know, the main character could be like Bond then or just any of these. It could just be a young guy coming to see. I don't think I'd want Bond to be the main character, but he could be like the secondary main character. You know, he's kind of the guy showing him the ropes and teaching him how to take care of business on the sea.
You basically just want another 20 of these exact same novels is what you're telling me.
If he was still writing these books, yeah, I would be completely pleased. What's your answer? Do you have an idea?
Yeah, I was just thinking about it as I was asking it. So I think there'd be two kind of spinoffs that I'd want to see. One of them's pretty obvious because it's like a whole genre that already exists. And it would be like, okay, instead of just getting Maturin occasionally meeting Sir Joseph Blaine, what if we had a whole book series about Blaine? Intelligence and the spy world and like...
Okay, yeah.
Like that's like... It's basically Robert Ludlum, but in 19th century Napoleonic England. It'd be super interesting and like intrigues in the spy life. That'd be cool.
I'm in. That'd I'm be sold. Fun.
But the one that I think would be even more interesting that I think would be so different would be, why don't we have a Sam Panda series?
Okay. But what's the compelling narrative? How does it become a series?
Because Sam Panda's the most interesting character for the 21st century. He is the biracial illegitimate son of a 19th century British sea captain raised by Catholics who becomes like a leader in the Catholic Church in South America, right?
Uh-huh.
That's a crazy story. And you could, there's so much sociopolitical and like relevant cultural commentary that you could weave in there. Like he's active in the abolition movement. You could have a socially engaged progressive series of novels that like Sam Panda is a character in. And then he goes and meets his dad, Jack Aubrey. And like everybody's like, oh, cool. I know that guy. You know, like the tie-in.
I don't think I'm in. I'm sure that'd be interesting, maybe a novel, but it just doesn't have the same ability to have a constantly compelling narrative as like naval intelligence or even what I presented. I'm sorry, Sam Panda, thumbs down.
You're not going to green light my Sam Panda pilot?
If you want to write the book, I'll read it though, Steele. I'll do it.
My
I
Sam
promise
Panda
you.
Fan fiction?
I wonder what kind of audience would be ready for that. It'd be like me and that one guy I met at NAU one time.
And you'd both be like, yeah, I'm going to take it's a hard pass. Thanks, man. Don't write anymore.
But you do the Joseph Blaine thing. Like, I'm in. I think you do well. So just consider that steal.
Yeah.
Well, I think we've exhausted everyone that's not us regarding this subject. I'm so pleased that you're reading these books, Steel. I've loved them. I'm glad that you've really enjoyed it.
Me too, man. Dave, this was another episode of Theme Songs, Sea Shanties, Aubrey Maturin. Out.
Good night.
Good night.